Hello and welcome to this episode of the Her Success Podcast. We are the podcast that interview highly aspirational women with the view of inspiring the next generation of leaders in the engineering and tech world. The podcast is brought to you by Engtel. We are an engineering and technology recruitment firm. If you are looking for any engineering and technology talent, or you are an engineer yourself looking for your next position, please get in contact. Today, I'm joined by Yesenia Sevilla. Yesenia is an innovator who has a 20-year career across a number of leadership roles in a variety of industries. We explore the topic of innovation. We talk about how people can become more innovative, how companies can become more innovative. I think it's a really rich, excellent discussion, and I'm really excited to get to the show. Hope you guys enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Her Success Podcast. I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Yesenia Sevilla. Yesenia is a TEDx speaker, innovator, collaborator, builder, and leader. She has an incredibly diverse background. She's held many leadership roles across a number of industries, including biotech, healthcare, consulting, and higher education. I'm really excited to dive into her background. Yesenia, thank you so much for being on the show and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. So excited to share some of my experiences with you.
Yeah, really excited to dive into it. First place I always like to start is getting a bit of an overview of your background, and then we'll dive into some of the things that you've done. But would you mind just giving us a bit of an overview of where you came from and how your life has sort of got up to today?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what's interesting about my background, and I try to impart this on to the young innovators out there, is that I've really lived a sort of what I call organic journey in terms of career. What I've done is, instead of following a straight line, I have found that meandering from opportunity and possibility to opportunity and possibility has been really where I have found my strong sort of application of skill set. So I've basically built my life upon having a backpack and a tool belt. And I've put education and knowledge in my backpack, I've put skills in my tool belt, and then I've moved from opportunity to opportunity. So I started in higher education, in executive education, and then I moved from there into biotech, and then launched a career in biotechnology, biomedical innovation, from everything from sports medicine, total orthopedics, to stem cells, interventional radiology, oncology, and working in those fields, all the way into a small stint in midwifery and leading a midwifery, both school and birth center, and then running a cord blood bank, where we were really looking at the collection of the umbilical cord stem cells for life-saving treatments. And then finding myself back in higher education in both an innovation academy and an innovation center, where the idea is, instead of trying to work backwards and try to bring innovation into companies and organizations sort of at the later stage, mm-hmm. trying to then implant the innovation mindset much younger in that cycle of people that I would want to hire, people that I would want on my team, why not go back into higher education and introduce people to that innovation mindset earlier? So my career has been this very interesting meander on paper, but when you look at my top five strengths, when you look at what I really am good at, it makes all the sense in the world if you follow a path of connecting your dots as opposed to connecting some trajectory that someone else plans for you.
Nice, love that. I just love that the visual image as well, putting experiences in your backpack, skills on your tool belt.
Yeah.
I think that's a very great metaphor for it, for life, I guess. At the moment, you are doing work at Vanderbilt University. And I know you were assistant director of entrepreneurship and now director of strategic engagement and ecosystem development. Tell me a little bit about what that role involves.
Well, two things about this role that are really fun. And one I like to share with people, because I think sometimes, again, along the lines of don't follow linear progression. So I was hired on to be this assistant director of entrepreneurship just because that was a role that was open. I wanted to get into the Wondery. I wanted to do the things that are happening here at this Innovation Center, but I also wanted to bring innovation to the Innovation Center. So about a year into it, I decided that my skill sets were a little bit different and beyond just entrepreneurship. And so I crafted this job description. I went out, did some research, crafted this role, which is strategic engagement and ecosystem development. So based on my strengths and the things that I can do, I thought what this center needs to grow bigger and to share its message and to really play a role in our ecosystem to all the things that we can do and connect them to the people and companies and other universities around us, we really need someone to sort of lead that charge of connector and leader and communicator. So I went out and crafted this job description. I crafted the title and I pitched it to the people above me and to the university. They liked it. They agreed with me. I pitched them other similar type jobs and similar type salaries. And then they went, discussed it, approved it, opened the position. I then applied for the position that I pitched and I got the position that I pitched.
Wow. That's amazing. Really great.
Yeah. So you don't have to just apply to what's out there. You can create it. So innovation at all levels of your life. So what my role is all about is, if you want to play a role as an organization, much higher than even an individual, in how your ecosystem really is sort of an active innovation ecosystem, meaning that you're supporting not just the community that lives there, not just the companies that want to do business there, but the education that lives there, and making sure that those three components plus government are really sort of interacting with one another to create businesses, to create advances in the human experience, then you've got to connect all of them. They've got to talk to each other. They can't live at the exclusion of one another. And so what's cool about higher education, among lots of things, is they can play sort of this neutral territory and be the safe one to connect everyone. And it's a great opportunity then for the young people at the university to see all components of an ecosystem and figure out where they might plug in later. And so that's what my position does. It connects all those layers together and then also shows young people where they might plug in later in life.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, just pick up on a couple of points there. I love what you mentioned about creating your own job spec. I had a similar experience of that in that I hired someone right when I first started Entel into a sales role. And truth be told, she wasn't the best suitor for that role. And I always knew she was an incredibly high caliber individual, like tons of commercial acumen, hardworking, intelligent, but just in the wrong type of role. And after about 2.5 years, it just didn't work out. Like, well, we kind of almost came to a mutual decision that, like, we loved each other, but we just weren't quite right for each other. And she left the organization. And then a year down the road, she called me up and was like, Chris, can we meet for a beer? And I was like, you know, I normally say yes to that question. Yeah, I met her and she basically pitched me this job and said, look, these are my skills. This is where I think I can add value. I know the organization. I know it could use someone like this. Hire me to do this. And she has been arguably our most effective employee maybe that we've ever had. So great message to anyone listening. I think that's sometimes can you often know yourself better than anybody else and the skills that you bring to the table. So yeah, great example of there. And then this thing I just wanted to quickly touch on is the lack of linear progression. I interview a lot of people on this podcast and all of them are incredibly successful in their own right. It is so rare, it never happens that someone just has linear progression, right? If you look at every successful person in the world, typically they go across different things and you're 20 years into your career, you're never where you thought you would be 20 years ago. So I think that that's also an important message for anyone that's listening, that you don't have to have that orthodox manager, director, vice president progression. A lot of the time it is, as you said, not linear.
Right. And you think about this too, is when we study innovation, we study at least what some in history might call this round of civilization, right? So when we look at the Industrial Revolution, so just a few years back, and I'm old enough to remember this, fortunately, unfortunately, right? I do have gray, is that what started out a few decades ago as this era being called the Fourth Industrial Revolution is now being called the Digital Revolution, right? Well, that's where the physical world and the digital world are actually intersecting. So we don't longer have a Fourth Industrial Revolution. What we have is this Digital Revolution. Things are happening so quickly in this Digital Revolution that the rate of speed with which innovation, technology, and all things that we know about our human condition are changing, that the idea that linear progression is still the norm is absurd. And the idea that humans can't reinvent their experience at the speed almost of consciousness is also absurd. So this idea that I believe that we should just sit back and be the victims of change is absurd as well. So I think it's especially critical for women and underserved communities to really sit there and make a choice. It's a conscious choice. It's a power choice, right? I can be a victim of change or I can master change. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really love the backpack and the tool belt, because two things. It means that you have the power to control what you put in your backpack and your tool belt, nobody else. You carry it. And it also implies that it's an adventure and it's fun and it's what you have the capacity to do. And so if we start to really kind of empower other people to put as much as they can in that backpack and to put as many tools as they can, and then just to go from adventure to adventure and not be afraid of that, think of what we could do. Think of the things we could learn. If you would have told me, I mean, in my lifetime, I've gone from no such thing as a cell phone to a cell phone now that can open doors, run my electric car, get me into concerts, have my entire Rolodex loaded on it, do my banking, and also superimpose kitty cat faces on me that I can send to my kids, right? Like all of that happens in something this size. So think about all the things that are going to keep happening in this revolution that's digital, because now we're meeting physical and digital. It's just, we should be excited and not scared and then take it on.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I mean, the change is going to happen regardless. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, you can choose to embrace it or not. And I think the analogy of backpack and the tool belt, I think it also brings light how important the experiences are, regardless of whether they're positive or negative, right? I think that some of the probably tougher times in my career and my life, probably the times where I was filling up my backpack and putting stuff on my tool belt, the times where things were really easy and was kind of cruising a little bit, maybe not so much. So I think it's that trade-off of, like, just because you maybe didn't have the most successful year from a results perspective, as an example, maybe you added a ton of stuff to your backpack during that year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about GLCC. I know you're an innovation advisor there. Tell me a little bit about the purpose of the organization and what you guys do.
So that's interesting. So one of the things that we do with innovation from Vanderbilt that we teach and that I do personally is I help to mentor and advise other entrepreneurs as they start this adventure into the land of innovation, right? We teach people who wouldn't normally call themselves innovators to really adopt this mindset. And so this company is led by and founded by a woman. Her name is Danielle DuPriest. And basically what you have is she has inherited a beautiful patent from her father. And what it is a very interesting dynamic patent on collapsible containers, the kind that you can see 25, 40, and 50 feet, right? So the idea is the shipping industry and the container industry hasn't changed in over 50 some odd years. So we were just talking about this revolution. And yet when we look at specifically the pandemic and we looked at what happened to supply chain all over the world, every industry was frozen and we had supply chain issues and materials stuck in the ocean, stuck at ports. And then we have this backup of supply chains. And we also know we have containers all over the world. We also know that we're wasting petro all over the planet with these containers. She's got innovations both in tracking, in collapsing, in transport. And she's new to this. She has this patent. Her father has passed. She's inheriting this. So she's building a legacy, bringing about new technology, and she's doing it all from scratch. Yeah. So my job is to advise and help her on all of the ways that she can adopt this innovation mindset. And so my role is to do everything, right? Helping her with the lean business model, helping her understand how to bring innovation from this idea to implementation and to a value proposition, and then to fundraise and then to present. So that could be anything from walking in with her to talk to a huge port of call and talk to them about their processes, or to sit with her and map out things, or to help do research on what are different shares of market that she could look at and identify for where her innovation can be implemented. And so it's this fascinating role that we could play for each other as people look to innovate and take an idea from your kitchen table to a market.
I mean, really, really interesting, particularly being an entrepreneur myself. I find that fascinating.
We interrupt this podcast for a quick 30-second introduction to Inktel, the host of Her Success. Inktel is a U.S.-based staffing agency specializing in engineering and technology. We have an insatiable passion for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And part of our mission is to balance the diversity scales in our industry. We are so tied to this mission that we donate $1,000 from every underrepresented placement made to our very own nonprofit, Diversify the Future. We then use the money to fund scholarships for underrepresented groups of people to help them obtain a STEM degree. If you're an engineer or a tech professional looking for a new position, or maybe a hiring talent for this space and want a recruitment partner, please get in touch.
You partner with minority and female-led startups on their innovation mindset. I appreciate this is a broad question, but where do we even start with that? Like, what's the questions that you ask or what you do when you're trying to improve someone's innovation mindset?
Right. Well, so through the university, there's a whole system to help students, staff, faculty, and alumni, right? So there's a whole process that's set up because we work with university-affiliated innovators and ideators. And so there's a process for that. And even personally on my own, it's the similar process, right? It's the lean business model. But the best way to think about it is first redefine innovation. So innovation, the way we see it and the way I personally see it, is any value add change that's implemented to improve the human experience. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Okay.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, good definition.
Right? So, and think of inclusive innovation. So any humans, any value add change, any human and all human experience. And the key word to innovation being implemented, right? Otherwise, it's just creativity, which is great, but that's not an innovation. Innovation means it has to be implemented. All right, so if that's your definition, then the key component to ask you is, what are you solving? And if you say you're solving something, that we have to do a couple of things. One is we can't make any claims or decisions that aren't evidence-based. That means we have to believe in customer or community discovery, and it must never end. And the second thing we have to do is start with a funnel approach. The first thing is the problem you're solving a mosquito bite or a shark bite? We want to solve the shark bites first. And then we have to look at, are we bringing forth a solution that at least in the short term has commercial viability, or is it something of societal impact? Neither is better than the other, but that's what we have to look at because it requires two different pathways. If we're looking at societal impact, that means that we're changing human behavior, we're changing systems, we're changing legislation. That is a whole process, which is social innovation. That's not entrepreneurship. If we then say, okay, the solution appears to have some commercial value, commercial viability. Okay, then we take a look at that and we say, all right, let's look at that idea. Let's de-risk the idea. Let's begin customer discovery. Let's find evidence that says this is the actual problem. And the experts on knowing that are the people we claim have that problem. The need knower is the expert. And that's how we start.
Nice. That's amazing. Yeah, I love that. Really, really good food for thought. If you were, as an individual, and let's say you want to increase your innovation, or you want to think more innovatively, what advice would you give someone to try and just think a bit more outside the box and get their sort of innovative juices flowing?
Okay, so two things. One is, I don't like the term outside of the box. And here's why. Blue sky thinking is awesome. Those are creative sessions. For innovation, we are bound by reality. So we like to say, and we as me and people that think like me, we like to say that innovation actually happens at the intersection of all the constraints within the box. You're a cool innovator if the exact dimensions of that box and all the constraints of that box, and you can still solve it in a unique way. That's innovation. Because if we had unlimited budgets and unlimited materials and unlimited time and unlimited solution variables, then pretty much anyone can come up with a solution, right? So that's not innovation. So that's the first step. The second thing is, very few times does the idea come to you at first blush, at first glance. And to think more innovatively, I would say, is you have to step outside yourself, not outside the box, but outside yourself. In other words, how many ways can you get input about the actual problem? Mm-hmm. And then the final thing I would say is fall in love with your problem, not your mm-hmm. solution. Because your problem will evolve, it will change, it will have different variables. Over time, your problem will be different. Or over time, as you study the problem, as you fall in love with it, you might find that the problem you think you had, the causation of that problem is different than mm-hmm. what you thought it was. But because you love the problem, you'll still want to solve it, even if you have to pivot 20 times. But if you fall in love with your solution, then you're stuck with something that will be subpar. And that you will convince yourself as a solution, but the person that you're supposed to be helping never actually gets helped.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, kind of what we talked about earlier about career not being linear, businesses are exactly the same, right? There's very few businesses from conception to commercialization stayed exactly the same.
You know,
you pivot products, you pivot ideas. And yeah, if you're solely focused on the solution that you are going to provide, I can see that you will lose your way because it's the problem itself that needs the focus.
Yeah. Or you'll miss new markets that you didn't know about before that you identified. And you're like, oh, fantastic, new markets, new line extensions, right? It creates that excitement over a new way to grow. It's not always that you were wrong. It's that you want to continue to grow and you want to continue to add. And so it's all of these cool new opportunities to do more than you did before or to do differently because you're growing, you're expanding, you're innovating. And again, it's about excitement. It's that joy of continuing to find solutions because you've continued to find new problems. And problems aren't bad. They're just there to be solved.
Well, one of the things that I've always tried to do is to really create an innovative culture at our company. And my general concept is that if you do that, rather than one brain, mind thinking about all these problems, you have 40, 50 brains thinking about all of these solutions and all these things that you can do. If you were to give advice to a company on how you could create an innovative company culture, what would you tell them?
And I actually have done this and it's been really fun. The first thing you have to do is create a safe environment that says, when we create this culture, it's not about weeding out people who aren't doing their jobs or things that everybody hates about the company, right? It's not this find the scapegoat, and it's not also a hate fest on the company. You've got to create that culture just right because sometimes people think, oh, it's a complaint box. Yeah. No. The second thing I would say is what it is going back to that definition. If you can improve the human experience for your employees and your clients, all right, those two focuses, how would you do it? And so human-centered design, using empathy to find solutions, I think is the crux here. So I have told companies before, start with your employees. Tell your employees once a quarter, bring them together for a human design sprint and say, everyone, and I like it physical because you get up and you get out of your space and everyone loves posties. You can do it electronically on a Jamboard if you want to make it fun and kind of private. Everyone put up their laptop. Everyone gets some sort of software that looks like post-its, or you do real post-its. I like real post-its because I want people to get up. And you put up a big wall and you say, what is the one thing that if you could improve upon your human experience at this company would be 10 times better? And then you tell everyone in the room, you have 3 minutes to come up with 50 ideas and then make them go. And then you do a sprint until you narrow that down to 4 ideas that the entire company can agree on. Start innovating that way. And then you do the next quarter, you do the same exercise for if you could pick what your customer would say would improve their experience. And then if you do that every quarter with different questions, you create an environment, but you have to implement them though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you don't implement them, it's bound to fail and people stop contributing.
It's worse than not asking a question to start with, right?
Absolutely.
Same with feedback. You can't act on every piece of feedback that you're given, but you need to acknowledge it and you need to make sure that people are aware that it's been taken on board. The worst thing you could do all that thing, then not act on it.
Absolutely. And you have to tell employees that when they narrow it down to these 4, they also have to volunteer to help implement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a freebie.
I love that. Innovation is such a strong theme in your background. Where did it come from? Was there any time where you felt in your life that you were just a natural innovator? I know you're obviously, you mentioned you're a first generation immigrant, but before we got on the show, was it through your parents? So where do you think that level of innovation sort of came from with you?
Well, I think it's a running joke in my family. So I've had a lot of people tell me that according to my stories, they think I was an indigo child, whatever that means. But I do know that one of the first words I learned was why, to the point where my mother tells me that they would come up with fantastical stories to get me to stop asking that question. And they also would try to pay me to stop talking. I never made any money, but even as a child, I would take things apart, learn how they worked, put them back together. But I was always very interested in how things worked and how they could work better. So I think even as a child, I wanted to know why things were the way they were. And I was always interested in how they could get better. So I think even as a child, I was always interested in how could we make things better? How might we? How might we? Why? How might we? And I think that that's always been what I've always wanted to do. But I've always been interested in how people together might make things better. Trying to get people to work together to make it better. Part of it is probably because my strengths are input, arranger, connector. Yeah. So when you see that throughout all of my career, it's been about that, right? How can we make things better? It's almost like for me, I see patterns and I want to make them as efficient as possible. So innovation is one of those things that when you see something working better, more efficiently, it just brings you more joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, one of the things that we haven't really touched on here, I think, is the importance of community and team and when it comes to innovation. I know you referenced a couple of the Gallup strengths there. I'm a huge Gallup geek. I have every person I've ever interviewed on a big Gallup spreadsheet and every person that works for our company. It's like, again, he's talking about the Gallup again. But for anyone listening that doesn't know, it's essentially a piece of software that asks you a bunch of questions and gives you your key strengths and as well as insights into how to play to those strengths. And if anyone hasn't done it, I would highly recommend it. It's very, very insightful. And building teams that complement each other from an ideas perspective, people that are very strategic and ideation heavy, partnering them with people that are more executor and implementation heavy, things like that. Have you seen much of that in your work, that the innovation will sometimes come from the dynamic of the people that you're working alongside? And just, I always think there's so much value. There's cliche to say two heads are better than one, but I hardly ever, in my opinion, does innovation happen in isolation. It's almost always sat around a table bouncing ideas off each other.
Absolutely. And it's this really great layered intersection. So there's strengths. Everyone should know their top five. It's said that through your life, your top five to top 7 to 10 will sometimes rotate depending on where you are. My top five are pretty set in stone. You should know them. I learned by mnemonics. So IRBE, right? Input, responsibility, belief, arranger, and individualization. I know them like that. With innovation, there's a second layer to that. There's what's called radical innovators and adaptive innovators. And you actually can learn what style of innovator you are. And then there's what we call the mid, not the slang term for mid that means not cool, but the mid meaning you're not a radical innovator and you're not an adaptive innovator. So the adaptive innovator are the folks that are very, very much arrangers, very much for the law, the regulations, the structure, the SOP. And the radical innovators are, I have a million ideas a minute and whoa. And what's interesting for innovation is not only do you need all of those strengths, but you also need people who are radical innovators and adaptive innovators. And then you need a couple of people that can move along the spectrum so that you can go, because innovation is interesting. It happens in these, we call them the diamond, but it's really like these spurts of radical thought. And then it's divergence and convergence. And so in that group, it's not only good to have all of these skill sets, but it's also good to have people who are radical innovators and then adaptive innovators so that you can go wide in thought and then bring it together. Wide in thought and then bring it together. Wide in thought and bring it together. Because if you don't have that at the table, you might have different strengths, but if you don't have those types of innovators, you will be brainstorming for 72 days, be very frustrated, and nothing ever gets done. And so that intersection is important too. I have seen companies with amazing creatives who all want to kill each other after a design sprint. And so that's really important to talk about too.
Yeah, or the opposite problem, which is you come up with one idea and then you completely go down a rabbit hole and you don't actually explore the wider spectrum. I think what you said before about, right, 50 ideas, go. Like, I think that's a really good start. here. And for those of you that are listening to this, I'm doing a big funnel movement with my hands and then hone it in into the right, iterate it, eliminate ones that are not going to work, and then come up with that. But to your point, you then need the action plan to actually put that in place.
Yeah. And I happen to know that I'm an adaptive innovator, right? And so I really enjoy the process of all these ideas going up. But where I really am helpful is I'm chomping at the bit when the timer goes off to do the first theming, right? And categorization, because that's where my arranger jumps in, input and arranger. And so when I see the wall of 100 post-it notes, I want to be let loose on the wall because I quickly see pattern and I want to categorize them all of the ideas that are similar. I want to put them together and I want to group them and I want to see all of the duplicates and put those together. And so it's this amazing for me of patternization, if you will. So for me, that's my skill set. And then I want to step back and let the creatives go back at it. And then I want to go back in. And then, so when you have those different innovative styles on a team, you'll get so much done in 8 hours that it's amazing.
100%. I mean, my number one strength is Maximizer, which is kind of why I'm very obsessed with the Gallup, because it's very much looking at people's strengths and putting them into the right roles and playing to those. I often thought it would be a very good experiment to start a company without any idea or anything like that, simply your personality type. So, okay, based on your personality, you would be the CEO, you would be the CFO, you'd be the COO, you'd be the head of sales. And the personalities would work off each other and create innovation. Like, I really believe that something like that could work.
I think it could. And I think it would be very, very interesting. And I would love to help you do that.
Yeah. All right. Maybe we'll do it. But yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Awesome. We're almost out of time here, which has been an amazing discussion. I've really enjoyed it. I guess last question before we wrap up, tell me something about the future for you. Like, you know, what do the next couple of years look like? What's something that you're really excited about for the future?
Yeah. So for me, I think most of what has been sort of coming to a head now has been sharing this message about innovation and trying to really get out there and teach more and more underserved communities that everyone is creative and anyone is an innovator, right? That everyone is capable of innovation and everyone should be innovating. And that we shouldn't leave innovation to just one industry or one type of person or one type of science or one type of background or degree. And so for me, I think it's more of these kinds of things where I can share with people, you are an innovator. You can go from thinking about a problem and thinking about a solution, regardless of who you are, where you live, what language you speak, what you've studied, because we all are sharing in the human experience. And we all are expert need knowers because we all experience problems. And so for me, that's part of it. My TED talk was very much, how do we work with the people around us to create innovation ecosystems, but also to be problem solvers, right? To share perspective. So this year, my calendar is filling up with talks to help inspire people to solve problems and to join in solving problems in community, and for people to stop asking the mundane, not necessary questions of each other and start asking and sharing value propositions with each other. And I think that's what I want to see in the future. When you meet someone, it's not about where you're from, where you came from. It's what do you do? What value do you bring? What's in your backpack?
Yeah, love that. I think as well with innovation, I think it's giving people the confidence that you can learn it, right? I often thought, certainly in my early years, I heard like an entrepreneur or an innovator, it was almost like they were just like born that way, just this uber creative person that I was never going to be like. But actually, you can train your brain to innovate and you can train your brain to think, not outside the box, but inside the box. And it's not just these crazy creative people that have this genius that you're never going to be able to get to. When I learned that and I started to appreciate that, that's when I think I started becoming more innovative as a person.
Yeah, you don't have to wear a lab coat and have white hair, right? Like, that's what everyone thinks of. You have to look like Albert Einstein to somehow be this genius innovator. No, everyone can be an innovator, and it takes about 5 seconds and a deep breath. You just have to go from that could be better to how might I make it better? That's the first step. That's it. That's the step you have to take. And then when you go to how might I make it better, change that to how might we make it better? How might we? Start your sentences with how might we, and then go find the we.
Absolutely. Some great advice to end what's been a fantastic episode. Yesenia, thank you so much. I feel like we could chat for hours on this subject, but really appreciate you sharing your background, talking to us about innovation in general. I've certainly really enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure we have all of our guests will as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I definitely enjoyed it. And let me know when you're ready to start that radical company. I'm ready to go.
Certainly will. Well, thank you for everyone that's listened today. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I have. As always, Yesenia's contact information and LinkedIn, et cetera, will be shared on the episode. So I'm sure she won't object to anyone. If you have any questions or anything like that, feel free to reach out. And dial in next week for our next episode.
Thank you so much for listening to today's Her Success podcast, brought to you by Intel. We hope you found it inspiring and insightful. For more conversations with inspirational women, why not check out our interviews from season one? If you enjoy the podcast, please take a moment to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us grow and reach more listeners who can benefit from these empowering conversations. Don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn at Her Success and follow us on Instagram at Her Success the Community for a daily dose of inspiration. Want even more Her Success in your life? Sign up for our newsletter on our website to receive exclusive information on future episodes, blogs by our amazing guests, special features, upcoming events, and much more. Thank you for being a part of Her Success Community. Stay tuned for our next episode in 2 weeks' time.